One evening in the spring of 2002, I took Marley out for a short walk around the yard. The night was cool, in the high 40s, and windy. Invigorated by the crisp air, I started to run, and Marley, feeling frisky himself, galloped along beside me, just like in the old days. I even said out loud to him, "See, Marl, you still have some of the puppy in you." At the porch stoop, Marley gamely tried to leap up the two steps, but his rear hips collapsed on him as he pushed off, and he found himself awkwardly stuck, his front paws on the stoop, his belly resting on the steps, and his butt collapsed flat on the sidewalk. There he sat, trying to get up, but it was no use. He cannot lift his rear off the ground. Finally, I grabbed him under the front shoulders and turned him sideways so he could get all four legs on the ground. Then, after a few failed tries, he was able to stand. He backed up, looked apprehensively at the stairs for a few seconds, and loped up and into the house. From that day on, his confidence as a champion stair climber was shot. He never attempted those two small steps again without first stopping and fretting. Marley reminded me of life's brevity, of its fleeting joys and missed opportunities. One day you're swimming halfway out into the ocean, convinced this is the day you will catch that seagull. The next, you're barely able to bend down to drink out of your water bowl. Like Patrick Henry and everyone else, I had but one life to live. I kept coming back to the same question. What in God's name was I doing spending it at a gardening magazine? It wasn't that my new job did not have its rewards. I was proud of what I had done with the magazine. But I miss newspapers desperately. I miss the people who read them and the people who write them. I missed being part of the big story of the day and the feeling that I was in my own small way helping to make a difference. I missed the adrenaline surge of writing on deadline and the satisfaction of waking up the next morning to find my inbox filled with emails responding to my words. Mostly, I missed telling stories. I wondered why I had ever walked away from a gig that so perfectly fit my disposition. When a former colleague of mine mentioned in passing that the Philadelphia Inquirer was seeking a Metropolitan columnist, I leapt without a second's hesitation. Columnist positions are extremely hard to come by, even at smaller papers. And when a position does open up, it's almost always filled internally, a plum handed to veteran staffers who've proved themselves as reporters. The Inquirer was well-respected, winner of 17 Pulitzer Prizes over the years, and one of the country's great newspapers. I was a fan, and now the Inquirer's editors were asking to meet me. I wouldn't even have to relocate my family to take the job. The office I would be working in was just 45 minutes down the Pennsylvania Turnpike, a tolerable commute. I don't put much stock in miracles, but it all seemed too good to be true. Like an act of divine intervention. In November 2002, I traded in my gardening togs for a Philadelphia Inquirer press badge. It quite possibly was the happiest day of my life. I was back where I belonged, in a newsroom, as a columnist, once again. I had only been in the new job for a few months when the first big snowstorm of 2003 hit. The flakes began to fall on a Sunday night, and by the time they stopped the next day, a blanket 2 feet deep covered the ground. The children were off school for 3 days as our community slowly dug out, and I filed my columns from home. With a snowblower I borrowed from my neighbor, I cleared the driveway and opened a narrow canyon to the front door. Knowing Marley could never climb the sheer walls to get out into the yard, I cleared him his own potty room, as the kids dubbed it, a small plowed space off the front walkway where he could do his business. When I called him outside to try out the new facilities, though, he just stood in the clearing and sniffed the snow suspiciously. He had very particular notions about what constituted a suitable place to answer nature's call, and this clearly was not what he had in mind. He was willing to lift his leg and pee, but that's where he drew the line. Poop right here, smack in front of the picture window? You can't be serious. He turned and, with a mighty heave to climb up the slippery porch steps, went back inside. That night after dinner, I brought him out again, and this time Marley no longer could afford the luxury of waiting. Before I could stop him, he somehow clambered up and over the sheer snow wall the snowblower had cut and began making his way across the yard toward a stand of white pines 50 feet away. I couldn't believe it. My arthritic, geriatric dog was off on an alpine trek. Slowly, painfully, he made it to the closest pine tree. Suddenly, I saw what he was up to. The dog had a plan. Beneath the dense branches of the pine, the snow was just a few inches deep. The tree acted like an umbrella, and once underneath it, Marley was free to move about and squat comfortably to relieve himself. I had to admit, it was pretty brilliant. He circled and sniffed and scratched in his customary way, trying to locate a worthy shrine for his daily offering. Then, to my amazement, he abandoned the cozy shelter and lunged back into the deep snow en route to the next pine tree. The first spot looked perfect to me, but clearly it was just not up to his sterling standards. With difficulty, he reached the second tree, but again, after considerable circling, found the area beneath its branches unsuitable. So he set off to the third tree, and then the fourth, and the fifth, each time getting farther from the driveway. Finally, he reached the last tree on our property, a big spruce with a dense canopy of branches out near where the kids waited for the school bus. It was here he found the frozen piece of ground he had been looking for, private and barely dusted with snow. He circled a few times and creakily squatted down on his old, shot, arthritis-riddled haunches. There, he finally found relief. Eureka! The next morning, I shoveled a narrow path out to the far spruce tree on the corner of the property for him, and Marley adopted the space as his own personal powder room for the duration of the winter. The crisis had been averted, but bigger questions loomed. How much longer could he continue like this? And at what point would the aches and indignities of old age outstrip the simple contentment he found in each sleepy, lazy day?